Welcome back to JK Moto Podcast, a motorcycle podcast for the everyday rider, covering current bike and racing news, specializing in track days, club racing, and great entertainment. We truly do it all. And this week we are brought to you by JK Moto Entertainment, your one-stop shop for all your motorcycle track day and club racing questions and answers. Subscribe on YouTube, follow on Facebook and Instagram at JK Moto Entertainment. Welcome back. Once again, we are not here to cover MotoGP this weekend or this week or this episode because, well, there's no MotoGP, but we do have some racing to cover. So we're going to get a couple of awesome guests on and cover some racing. It was the first round of Utah SBA, so I'm going to bring on some old friends that I think you guys might recognize if you've been on the show before. If you haven't been on the show before, welcome. Thanks for being here. Please, once again, make sure you click the subscribe button down below and go check out the rest of the YouTube channel. If you're not listening on YouTube, that's great. I'm glad you found us. Go check out the YouTube channel if you are on YouTube. I like to put out a warning. These usually last about an hour to an hour and a half, and I wouldn't want to just sit in front of a computer for that long or whatever. If you like playing the video in the background, I appreciate it. Keep it up. Let's do it. But if not, and you want to listen to it, there's an RSS link down in the description, so go check that out and follow us on your favorite platform. But without further ado, let's go ahead and get into the episode. So we're rolling intro and bring on our guests. My first track day, I got the pictures back and I was like, I'm never doing that again. Ground at 100 miles an hour.
And we're back.
We're back.
Whoa. Look who's back. All right.
That's what's up. That's what I'm talking about. We got the whole JK Moto team back after a long stint. Not too long, but decently long.
I feel like I was just here, actually.
That's true. You were. Yeah.
You were just here.
You were just here talking about dirt and talking about getting ready for round one of Utah SBA and not round one of Moto America, which we're not going to talk about Moto America today, although I do like the hoodie. Looking at. Yeah, representing. I just wanted to get a quick recap on round one of racing over in Utah. It was early May. We'll start with the basics. Cole, I know you love the weather. How was the weather that weekend?
It was 100 times better than last year, which was still 99% shit.
That
confirmed.
Okay.
So if no you don't snow. Recall, right. Yeah. Round one last year literally snowed midday on Sunday, and this time it only rained enough to screw up the KOM race. So, yeah. That was fun.
All right. Well, I was going to pull up results, but we kind of talked a little bit off air about results being locked away in Lugnut's private safe vault in some bank in
Gringotts
country. Yeah, Gringotts, sure. Yeah, what was that?
Harry Potter.
Harry Wars, something.
For the love,
the Goblin Bank of Harry Potter. I just watched it last night. I had to watch something to help me go to sleep.
All right, there you go. That's fair.
Cole's a closet Harry Potter fan, by the way.
Yeah, you guys disgust me.
We got to end the show. This is over. We got to quit. Right now.
Thanks for listening, guys. See you later.
That's it. It's done. It's out in the air. That was the big announcement. That's what we got.
Yeah, Cole's a Harry Potter fan. We're done.
Well, no, so Cole or Lugnut, I do, you know, I want to get your rundown on how your weekend went. And I got some other questions, too, because I know Privateer Industries happened to be on the other side of the country without you. Yeah. So just get a quick rundown on that, too. But before we dive into that, Cole, I do believe it was your first ever weekend racing in the expert class.
First one. Anthony here said something to me like, go get the thing done. You can never do that again.
You never have expert race.
Expert race again. So go get the thing done.
And you're still on the trusty 2022 BMW?
2020 BMW in true stock 1000 fashion. Just got to point that out.
Okay.
With crooked clip-ons.
I fixed them before I went out again.
Is that like
I got some ape arms or something. I don't know what's going on.
Is that an in between every round thing, or just every race, or every 15 minutes?
You've both seen it. No clip on is safe with me. I don't have to put it down to get it out of whack. I just ride the bike and they come back, you know, however they want to be.
Is he it puts them square and then I get on the bike and I'm like, what is wrong with you? He's like, I don't know. I put them straight.
Is it specifically because there's two options here. Either you're just trying to you're really trying to go fast and you're just wishing that bike had more throttle. So you're just pulling the entire handlebar, or I know you've had some shoulder things in your past. Is it one of your shoulders likes to just kind of hang in?
I don't know. Something's happening, though, because it's on multiple bikes. When I get done riding them, they come back with – don't matter how you torque a clip on, it don't matter what you do, it seems like I move them.
I feel like the left side one always comes in a little bit on you. Yep.
So it's not the throttle. It's the – okay. What's on the left side of the bike? Is that where your rear brake is?
Basically nothing. That's probably why that one is like – moves, because like that's the one that you can get away with holding on to pretty tight or whatever. Like you can't do that with the right hand, the gas.
I guess that makes sense, because you're always just kind of sitting there and you get that clutchless up and down and everything else. And so your bike, there's no wings, you're not running any race gas, you're not running.
I am running race gas. Maverick 91.
Yeah,
that's race gas, baby.
Yeah, that's that special edition shit.
Sure.
Maverick 91.
All right.
Only available in the West.
But we also, I believe, if Lugnut wasn't lying to me, we swapped you over to GP Shift?
Yes, sir.
Little down to go up type of action. How? Tell me the GP Shift story. Or is there a story there? Or is it just kind of it was fine?
There's not necessarily a story so much. Anthony sent me out on his bike one day.
Mm-hmm.
Told me, you got to ride this bike, and then neglected to remind me that it was GP Shift till I got out there. So I had to figure that out fast. We did one round at Chuck Wallow with the GP Shift over the winter. I had gotten used to it that day. It took a couple sessions to get it out of your head. And I'd be a liar if, you know, I ride so many other things during the week that are normal. Mm-hmm. But it does, every once in a while, you got to remind yourself, especially under like hard braking, like I need to shift down which one. Which way am I going?
Well, that's what I've always been curious for you, because I know you grew up kind of all over the place, three-wheeler, four-wheeler, dirt bikes, just kind of whatever. I've been to your house a few times, and you always have to ask, which one is this? Is it like all down or down one or all up or whatever it might be? So,
you know where I always have a problem with it is in the pits, like trying to get a bike into neutral so I can put it back in my pit or on the stand.
Mm-hmm.
Even my bike, I'll put it in sixth gear sometimes and be like, what the hell, dude? Why won't it go into neutral?
Okay, so let's do a quick tech segment. I'm glad you said that, because I thought I was the only, you know, person struggling with that. The only time the GP Shift is giving me trouble anymore, mm-hmm. the only time it gives me trouble is when you take off out of the pits headed for the track. I tend to always shift down, and that puts you in second. And so...
Yeah. Okay. So when you first get on the bike,
every time I'm second gear, and then I'm like, damn it. And then when you come back, when I'm trying to find neutral, sometimes that's when the mind, when you're rolling into the pit, that's when the mind automatically reverts back to the old school and sitting there struggling, trying to get the thing in neutral.
I swear I do it every time.
That makes a lot of sense. I had GP Shift on my Aprilia for like a week, and never on the track, just out on the road. And there was one time I was getting on the freeway. And I gave her the onion, if you will, and went to shift and clicked underneath the thing. And luckily it was out on the road, so it's not like I was redlining or anywhere close. But yeah, instead of going into third, it went into first and had a lot more RPM all of a sudden. Yeah. It was a good time. And I was like, oh yeah, oh okay. Good thing that was here. Which is why I haven't quite revert. I've got all the parts now that you guys are all converted over. I'm like, oh, maybe I should also, but not yet.
Something we'll talk about as we get into this USBA thing is a certain green bike that we both rode this weekend together, and knowing that that thing was going to be GP Shift and there's not another option for that, I persuaded Cole. I was like, hey dude, we got to get you into GP Shift. But I feel like Cole, like going to West next round, I think you'll really see the benefit of that even more so, like through turns 3 and 4, or four and five, whatever they call them, because like you have to like grab that upshift all leaned over and stuff, and it's so helpful to be able to just slap the shifter and grab your upshift. So
that's the only like real advantage I have heard of the GP shift, is when you're leaned over in a turn and you need to upshift.
Well, there's that, and then like the speed of the shift, right? Like you don't have to scoop under the shifter to get your shift in GP shift. You can just slap. And then usually when you're coming into a corner, you've got all day. I mean, maybe not. It feels like it, but you've got time to get your foot underneath and then grab your downshifts on your way in your braking zone. So to me, it just makes sense. Like, and on track, I don't get screwed up by it. You know, like we were talking about getting screwed up by it in the pits and in the paddock. Mm-hmm. But on track, I don't get screwed up by it because it's just like, everything's so mechanical and habitual. Like you go into turn one, you're grabbing two downshifts, then you're grabbing an upshift, and then you're going three more corners before you get a downshift, right? Like it's just so mechanical that you do everything right. And then as soon as you come back in the pit, you're not on that mechanical mode anymore. And yeah, you all have that to actually time. Think about what you're doing, and that's when you get screwed up.
Yeah.
Seems like it.
That makes a lot of sense. Well, so, I don't need to get into crazy results, Cole, but how was it? I know you won a couple championships last year with the novice at Utah SBA, which is awesome. It was great. And you're stepping up, can't sandbag and hang out with novice for too long. Lap times are, I think, a little different. So, you know, what was that like getting out of there? Any nerves right off the bat?
I don't think there was any nerves. I actually enjoyed a couple things to unpack there. One, I mean, I know all the guys, been on track with all the guys, right? Even from a novice standpoint, you still see those people, you know, the locals, you're still racing with the same people. It was fun. It was fun not to, you know, generally speaking, at least at USBA, when you have two waves start, they make the novices sit on the line and it makes it so that you never get the opportunity to go race with those guys.
Yeah.
For a lot of last year, I was starting on pole and holding that position. So unfortunately, you know, you were trying to catch the experts and pass some of the trail end of the experts or whatever that all had a head start on you from the beginning. Mm-hmm. So it's nice to get up there with those guys. And I had a lot closer racing. I had a lot more battles. And that made it a lot funner, even though I'm not where I want to be just yet. But we're going to be okay. I mean, everybody's dealing with the same thing, first race of the year. So everybody's dealing with the same thing. So it's not an excuse for me, but just, you know, Anthony likes to tease me. I'm the slow burn, but it's
shake, kind of shake the dust off a little bit.
The what?
So shake the dust off a little bit, you know?
Yeah. It's not that I needed dust. I just kind of, I had a bit poor attitude on Friday and the attitude got better as the week went, but just everything from like a start, from what you can get away with on a start, just all those things. It takes me a minute to, doesn't take me as long as you, but it does take me. it does take me a minute to get back into the swing of things.
Yeah. So outside of lap times though, I'm just kind of curious, you know, what else is different? Like, do you feel like the actual competitiveness, say you were with a guy that you were there competing with, do you feel like that racing is more intense up in the expert class, or is it kind of just purely these guys are just running faster? Can you feel like there's more experience there? Or do you feel like you're actually getting a more intense racing experience?
Yeah, for sure. Again, it's different for everybody in different classes depending on their speeds, but in the novice classes, I would usually had one guy to fight with. That guy might have changed from race to race, but it was usually just one guy, maybe two. And in the expert class, there was, you know, five different guys that were similar paces, and we were together throughout the race or for the bulk of the race. So there were passes, you were passing people, you were being passed by people, trying to get those people back. It was just a more intense from start to finish.
Okay.
I think I will say this just to give you some kudos. Out of all the novices that bumped from last year to expert, I think you were probably average finish the best, right? So you're like still ahead of your classmen, if you will. And I think the first round of expert is always a little shaky as far as results is concerned. I mean, I remember my first expert round and definitely wish I would have done better or whatever, but the race starts are a lot closer down in turn one. People lean on you a lot harder. The, like Cole was saying, the competition is a lot more stiff. Like it's still the same $2 trophy at the end of it, but when you have white plates on, you race each other a little bit harder. You know, you got more experience now. You trust the guy next to you a little bit more. So, the bummer for me was not being able to watch Cole race much, you know, being out there on the same grid together. But also, it was cool sharing the grid with you. You know what I mean? Like, now not only are we on the same team, but we're in the same race. That's pretty rad.
Well, I'll get up there so that you can at least see me in the corner one going forward. That's my promise to you. But
catch the whole shot. That way we can play grab ass.
You know, I think this relates, but another thing that was different is some of my tactics didn't work anymore.
Yeah.
I would stab it under somebody and expect them to flinch. And they wouldn't flinch. And sometimes that would end up, you know, resulting in me not getting the drive I wanted because I put the bike out of position intentionally. You know, not quite enough to like do a block pass or something like that. Just really just showing them a front tire. And in the novice group, it was more frequent that somebody would flinch and stand it up just a little bit and let me through. And these guys, man, you're rolling through the corner, and I'm like, I'm right here, dude. You got to get out of the way. I'm going to kill both of us, and they wouldn't move.
We going to die today. That's one thing about the experts is they'll just let the brake lever roll and be like, all right, let's see how this goes.
Yep.
But then at the end of the weekend, everybody survived, and it just made it more fun that way.
Yeah, for sure. And so that was definitely a big change. Another lesson I learned this week, which I'm gonna still try to take this slow. But what Jeff Whitmer tell me this weekend? He said turn the knobs, and then he said some other stuff I can't say on here. But
sounds like Jeff.
So I decided this week that maybe, or after that round, that maybe I'm wrong. I'm reluctant to change things because it's me. I'm never the guy, or not very often, sometimes probably, but I'm not the guy that says the bike's too slow or the bike's, you know, the bike doesn't turn good or the bike doesn't whatever. It's always just me. I should be going faster. I'm doing something wrong. I'm not turning it right. I'm very reluctant to make adjustments.
Right.
Anthony and the CFO, the boss, she, was cussing me all week. Anthony got to hear it firsthand, but she's like, if you're not happy, then do something.
And so is that, to expound on that a little bit, let me get my head right. So you're saying, you know, normally for you, you ride the bike, let's just put a random lap time out there of a 150, random racetrack, random lap time, a 150. Other dudes on the same bike doing a 145, and you assume that you just can't get to that 145 because you cannot ride that fast.
Yeah.
So now that you're down more in the, like, to use the same lap times, maybe now you're down in the 147s. Is it kind of a mix of like, you have added the speed and, you know, what made you happen upon like, okay, maybe I am actually ready to start changing the bike.
Can I steal your thunder, Cole?
Yeah.
All right. So just like we in the off season, Cole put suspension, adjustable suspension. He had those Beamers come with good, you know, forks and shock or whatever, but he'd done some things to him. But he put adjustable suspension on the bike. He has forks and a rear shock from Owens. And so before you get that, you don't know what you don't know, right? Like, you don't know how much better the bike could be or how much more comfortable it could be or whatever. Like, I literally do things differently than most other riders on a ZX10. My setup's a little bit different, and you know, that's just me and where I'm comfortable. So now Cole, you know, he's not wrong. It's always the rider. It's always going to be the rider. The rider is the biggest opportunity on the motorcycle, but having suspension and being able to make the rider more comfortable will allow the rider to go faster, right? So it's not like changing the bike is the miracle, you know, that you needed to drop 5 seconds, but changing the bike might be enough to make, you know, Cole, myself, or anybody a little bit more comfortable so that you can go out there and push for those extra few seconds.
Okay, that makes sense. It kind of almost unlocks a, yeah, okay.
Well, tell them about the front end there, Cole, from this weekend.
Yeah, just to reiterate, I know that in my mind, obviously a Josh Hayes and Anthony could get on my bike and run a faster time than me, and that pisses me off. That's my bike, right? I should be able to run it faster than anybody because it's my bike that I'm always on it, whatever. Mm-hmm. So I think that's what's always in the back of my head, is that if Anthony could get on my bike without turning a knob or changing anything and run 4 or 5 seconds faster than me on that bike, then why can't I do it? So it's still a talent thing or a skill thing that I got to work on. So I'm always stuck there just trying to get faster. But that being said, Anthony sat me down, yelled at me a little bit. He's kind of ruthless.
I've never seen this man yell.
I'll do it.
The CFO was telling me, what are you feeling? You got to be able to communicate what you're feeling. And I don't know. I have a hard time with that, maybe. But I don't know what I don't know, as Anthony said earlier. So I don't know what it's supposed to feel like sometimes, is how I feel. So it's hard to communicate. Like, the one thing that kept standing out is I can't stop. I just can't stop the bike, but I'm out there side by side with these other guys that seem like they can't stop the bike either. I mean, I'm just assuming they're feeling the same thing I'm feeling. I'm just not doing as good a job with it. And Anthony sat me down, ran me through 5 questions, and then started clicking crap on there. And the next round, I went out, and oh my God, man. The bike's like, all of a sudden it stops wherever I want it. It's completely, it was the biggest one, as stupid as that sounds, it was the biggest one thing change, you know, clip-ons or rear sets or, you know, going to a Q3 or all those kind of things. That was the biggest noticeable, just like, oh my God, this is a different bike. And I brought it back in the pits and I said, more please, more please. And
it's kind of funny though, because like, I felt like you were, you know, determined and struggling a little bit, like, was the look on your face previous to that moment. And then you came in after we made those adjustments, and it was just a big Cole smile that I'm used to seeing. And I'm like, there you go. You know, like, that's what we're supposed to do here.
It unlocked it. So yeah. my biggest question with that, because it sounds like, you know, you started messing with suspension a little bit and figuring
very,
out like
kinda... very little, by the way,
very little. It was obviously, I think what that tells me, Anthony, you can agree or not, but what that tells me is it was a blaring problem that I was not addressing. And so just to start going in the right direction, it was like the chunks were just like chong, chong, chong. I mean, it was.
World's a difference with my.
Now I'm super excited. I can't wait to get back to round two.
Okay. That's what I mean about like making the rider comfortable. You know what I mean? Like this is super techie stuff, right? Maybe this wasn't the objective of our podcast today, but enjoy it anyways, listeners. Mm-hmm. So with my Kawasaki, the way the geometry set up on the bike, I'm constantly battling having enough braking support and letting the bike fall on the nose so it can turn, right? So it's a balance, and I'm always playing with spring rates or preload or compression to get that just right, you know? And I think the change that we first made on your bike, Cole, was just maybe 3 turns of preload. So I had 3 turns of preload to the forks, and all of a sudden he comes back in smiling. I'm like, see, it's that easy. You know, and that's exactly why we went with suspension. So the reason why I brought up the listeners a second ago is because I get asked all the time, like, what do you think? Should I buy suspension for my bike? And I'll be honest with you, I don't really care what the pace is. My answer is normally yes. If you can afford it, to buy the suspension. And some people might disagree with me, but man, there's something about rider comfortability to be spoken to, you know, like, where if you can be comfortable, you're more likely to push outside of your comfort zone on the track so that you can grow speed and grow skills as a rider. I don't know. It just makes sense to me.
Yeah. I'm tracking.
You've ran that track, the east side. Mm-hmm. I went from having to yell at myself and grit my teeth to not hit the brakes on the start finish line before the 3 mark. Mm-hmm. To making those clicks and pushing it to the 2 and having full control to make an adjustment going diving under somebody or into turn 1. I mean, for example, the first race start out there, that was the scariest moment of the weekend for me, actually. The first race start, I went into turn 1 and she wouldn't stop. She wouldn't stop. I was trying to turn in to 1 and it was trying to just go straight. And it could have been a bad deal, but luckily we all made it through.
I was just going to say, so like looking back, you know, just to kind of stick on this whole, maybe some tips to some of the listeners out there. You ran a great season last year. Do you feel like if you had been open to those adjustments or, you know, whatever was stopping it or whatever, who cares? But if you had made adjustments like that last year, do you feel like that would have shortened your curve and made your getting faster? If that makes sense?
Yeah, I mean, possibly, but of course, I guess it should have. But now, like, we've just barely cracked. We just barely started playing with the potential now. And I still think there's a fine line. I mean, earlier I said I'm the guy that doesn't blame the bike. He blames himself. Mm-hmm. I still think there's some merit in that. I mean, I see this is not a hit at Anthony because he knows what he needs from the bike. And so he knows what to change. But too often I see people in the pits that change something after every rally. They don't even know what the hell they're doing. So I think there's a fine line with just, you know, going nuts and always blaming the bike and changing something after every round. That being said, those people that are screwing with it all the time, maybe they'll find something, I guess, quicker because they're willing to make the change. Slow burn.
Shout out to Fuzzy because Fuzzy built your forks for you. He does all my suspension stuff. I was actually just with him Friday, working on a couple rear shocks and suspension for the bike that we'll still get to talk about here in a minute. That I screwed up actually, but I learned a lot just by talking to him, you know what I mean? And like a lot of these guys, they don't have somebody in their pocket that they can talk to about these changes and what, you know, the effects and the counter effects is, because every single thing you change on the bike is going to have I don't want to say negative effect, but it's going to affect something you weren't thinking about. Right. You know, like we add preload to Cole's bike so that he can get it stopped better. And if you don't understand why preload helps with that, you know, we're blowing through the stroke. Like the forks are completely collapsed on our way into a corner. We can't pull the lever any further because the forks are on the bottom. So we had preload for a little bit of support to keep it up off the bottom, but then the thing doesn't turn as well, right? Like, so when I'm asking Cole, like, hey, this is, how's the bike turn in? How's it do this? What do you feel about that? You know, I ask him four or five questions, and these are the same things that Fuzzy would ask me, and that's how I learned, you know, okay, then let's try this, you know, and there's one or two different options, and you pick an option that has the least amount of counter effect on the motorcycle, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so, you know, I know what I'm looking for out of a bike as Cole goes through this and we make changes to his bike. We talk about what the bike's doing before and after, you know, he'll get to a point where it's like, oh, you know, like, I think I just want to throw a couple turns of preload on it. And he won't have to think about it. He'll just know, like, okay, I did this before. It made this better. Right. And so, yeah, you know, that's one of those things. And we just put it on. So it's only your second weekend on that suspension, you know, so we're still unlocking what we can do to help you out with that. And in time, it'll change. But yeah, I was just looking at Owen's valving curves for shocks because I had three rear shocks down at Fuzzy's and we were doing a service on them. And we changed the valving on them a little bit. It's pretty crazy how like one little 0.01 millimeter shim in a shock can change what the shock will do for you on track. you can lose yourself. If you like the analytical side of motorcycling or whatever, maybe you should learn about suspension because God, it's crazy.
Yeah, I don't dare. Well, I like the analytical side, but I'm scared of it.
Well, I think that's the thing that keeps this sport exciting for me and for a lot of people probably is it's hard to explain to people. Like y'all think back to the first time you went on a track and somebody's trying to show you the lines, you know, like, this is the proper line to follow on the track. Mm-hmm. So from this point to this point to this point. But if you're running that 150 Easton's talking about, you can run a 50 and you could run a 150, let's say, and never have to go out to the edge of the track. And as you get faster, those lines change and where the bike forces itself to and all those things, they change. But even going back to the simple preload thing we were talking about, we added a couple rounds. Well, I got 2 seconds closer to my PR, right? I immediately like started getting faster, and then it was like I was right back in the same spot again. I need more, and that's what changes. And you can go too far because now maybe your limitation is moved to something else, right? It's always changing what the bike needs based off of your speeds. And as you increase speeds at any track, the cycle just continues to change.
Yeah, I think every half a second to a second will change what the motorcycle demands.
Okay. So kind of maybe, yeah, a good mix of increase in speed, increase in knowledge on the bike, and just kind of you're just getting all of it. Seeing you're going to be telling me I need a tenth of a PSI less in the front, and I got to be running this compound at this temperature. And then, yeah.
Nick actually laughs at me because I set my front tire pressure to 38.3.
Okay. I guess I wasn't joking. Sorry.
No. Oh, man. It's kind of funny. I mean,
some of it's mental.
Yeah. I'm like, it just makes me giggle each time being number 83, you know, my stock number. 38.3 is my front tire pressure on average. Like, if I didn't know what I wanted to do for front tire pressure, that's what I go to.
There you go.
So let's run there this weekend go. Down. What do you think? Start back.
Yeah.
Start to finish.
Yeah, that sounds great. Yeah.
Run it. So we got to start with parking. Just kidding. So,
oh, dude, we can just like, okay, we're gonna limit this to 30 seconds.
Okay. All right. 30 parking seconds of parking.
Sucks at USBA. Change
yes.
It back.
Plan ahead. Agreed. It's not USBA. It's Utah Motorsports Campus, sponsored by Burt Brothers Tire and Service, and the operations manager of Utah Motorsports Campus is an idiot. But the track is still awesome. The facilities are great, and USBA is amazing.
And Burt Brothers is awesome, and they have nothing to do with the parking.
Correct. So many people think that, but it has nothing to do with them. It was just bad timing.
3, 2, 1. 30 seconds is up. All right.
All right.
Not that I was trying to kick you out of the
park. All right, so we got to start, Anthony. We got to start with, I know you did a lot of work in the background, whether anybody knows that or believes that or whatever. I appreciate it. I hope everybody else appreciates it. But we have, for the first time ever, all class qualifying. I think we got to start there.
Agreed. I didn't do shit. But actually, I'm going to take it back beyond that just for 30 more seconds. Don't count, Easton. So in the off season, as soon as last year was over, I got with the club and I know a lot of racers around the country. And I was like, hey, let's ask all these racers what they want out of a race organization, you know? Mm-hmm. And one of the top things was all class qualifying. And so the board listened at USBA and they added all class qualifying to the schedule. So I'm watching MotoGP right now in the background.
Yeah.
Not watching, just listening, but so, you know, what's exciting is you get Q1, you get Q2, you get your sprint race, you get your main race, right? There's all these elements to it. I think adding qualifying not only enhances the rider experience and makes it more fun, but, in Utah, they would grid by like signups and points. So if you came down from, you know, Montana and you ain't never been there before, you're going to start 43rd out of 43, which pretty much sucks, especially if you're possibly the fastest guy out there. Right.
Yeah.
So they did all these improvements to make a better experience and to make it more interesting or more enticing, rather, for somebody to come from out of town and race.
Agreed. And now I got to roll it back one more step.
How
I'd like to also add that Apex Track Days, who is the track day event organizer for the area, they always run the operations on the Friday before race weekend. Newly added this year is a TT class for racers only. So we've got a ABC group, but we also have a TT group for racers.
Is that like, so you have to have a race license to be in that group?
You have to
like
get approval. Can't even,
right.
You have to get approval. You have to email them and prove your lap times. You have to be within a certain range to be able to qualify.
Okay.
So I guess you could be a super, super fast racer on a, you know, 250 dirt bike or something and maybe not have the proper times to be in there.
Okay. So I guess my biggest question with that is like, does that turn into a good mix of novice and expert? Is the lap time good enough that like both can get in, or is it?
Yeah.
Exclusive? I think part of it's lap time. Like the lap time window is pretty big, but it's restrictive. So not any Joe Schmo can add themselves to that group. But the biggest thing is like, I don't know if it was Friday or Saturday where I went around you on the rumble strips and coming into the attitudes, Cole, but like we can do stuff like that. We can just ride our ride and just trust that the guys that were around aren't going to clean us out. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
because even on a nice A group day, you get some, you know, track day heroes that are fast, but not necessarily used to bumping bars.
Right. Or they get the red mist, right? Like as racers, if I went by some amateur racer who knows who I am, they probably won't try to follow me into the attitudes. You know, they're probably smart enough not to try and do that to themselves. But on a track day, I've had it happen so many times where I go around somebody and they're like, I'm going to follow them into this corner. And next thing you know, it's like, shh! Like, dude, I almost died. Like, you almost cleaned me out, bro. Like, don't try and follow me places. So it's more comforting for the racers. It's safer for everybody, you know, and it's a cool element that they added as well, the Apex track days.
Yeah. I like that. So the Apex track day thing and then the qualifying, both the benefits and improvements from last year.
So how'd your qualifying go, Cole?
Not great, because I'm a slow burner. So if I was a MotoGP racer, I'd be that guy that qualifies in the back. I'd be like Brad Binder.
Or Salvatore.
Well, yeah, that'd be rude.
Sorry. Right
Brad there. Binder, you just don't quite have the start speed that he had last year a couple times.
Yeah, I need a little bit of red mist. I need a little bit of that to pull me out.
But it's funny, as now that we do qualifying, right, Cole? Like for me, when at my first practice session on Friday, I followed out a guy who's a little bit slower than I am, but fast enough to where I have to race him to get past him. And I did that intentionally to like flip the switch for me. And so in qualifying, oftentimes I'll let a couple people go that I know that I can rip past and get onto my lap, but that way on my outlap, about halfway through the outlap, I can go after them and that red mist, you know, turns the switch on a little bit and I can actually ride my ride. So knowing that about yourself, you got to set yourself up in qualifying. Now it's like, we talked about like the never ending of racing and the setup and the strategies and stuff, but now qualifying is a whole new thing where you have to strategize your qualifying. You can't be behind people and get plugged up so you don't get a good lap in. You like if that's something that you need is a little bit of a racing scenario to turn you on a little bit, then you know, you gotta make sure you set yourself up for that success because you only got 10 or 15 minutes or whatever to find a good lap time.
Well, when I first started racing with USBA, I had never qualified before. And you know, I went out and whatever. It is what it is. I didn't understand. And the first time you talked me into going to Chuck Walla and I got to witness the qualifying, I was like, oh, hell no, you got to do this because it adds a, instead of sitting around all morning drinking coffee, waiting for the races to start, you know, treating them like warm-up rounds, it's a whole nother aspect. You know, you come back and people are watching the timer. They're telling you where you're at. You usually get two sessions. So if you didn't do good on the first one, you know, you got to go out and push that second one to try to climb up the ranks a little further.
It's intense, right? Like it adds a level of intensity, which at the end just adds to the weekend, you know? And so,
to bring up the shitty part of this sport, but how many more tires are you buying now that you're doing all this qualifying?
No, we'll get to that.
Okay.
No, like for me, it didn't change because last year they did qualify for KOM. So I'd always qualify on a set of tires and then I run those in the morning race on Saturday. And then I'd also use those same tires to do my warm up on Sunday. So like I have a strategy and nothing changed for me. And I would probably assume, Cole, that it didn't really add any extra cost to your weekend.
No, this was we'll ask the tire question after the next weekend because they didn't have the tire I wanted.
No, let's not go down that road.
Well, we don't have to go down that part of the road, but the fact that they didn't have the tire, so I'm always excited to get a freshie. And I'll throw the other one in the garbage just because I'm so excited to get a freshie. But the aspect of a freshie was not as exciting to me anymore. Like, who cares? It's just another one of those ones. So so I probably had my cheapest tire weekend that I had at least all year. I'll bet it was cheaper tires this round. So
I feel like I want to get further into that when we start talking about the E-word race. So
we're almost there.
But, yeah, I know. I'm excited.
He's pretty excited about that part.
Yeah,
I am, dude. I really am.
Was adamantly against it. He's sure excited now.
Yeah, he'll sum this thing up and then let's get to it. So I'm just gonna tell you about my morning and then we can get there. But and the tire thing, like Dale at Racer's Edge, like he asked me before we got up there, like, hey, what tires do you run? And I'm special, right? But I run the soft stuff always because my bike's set up for it. I can build enough heat in it where I don't deteriorate them. Everybody's like, oh, you need to run a hard tire to make it last. I'm like, I don't. Like, I don't know what your problem is. But So he didn't bring a bunch of the soft stuff, pretty much none of it. So we had to run down the harder compounds because it's supposed to be cooler. Well, end up being hotter than he assumed. And so he'll never make that mistake again. But I think my PR on East was a 133.8. Last year did that. So in qualifying, I went 133.7. I know on those tracks, it's when it's cool, it's fast. It doesn't get greasy. So I was trying really hard. Won my first race of the day. And then that was Cole's first expert race as well. But yeah, so that was qualifying and my first race. But I will say now that endurance, which is what I'm excited to talk about, they take the fastest qualifiers time from the team. If you're doing a team endurance, and that's how they grid us up. So my 33.7 not only worked for my whole weekend, but it put me in that guy, if that's the right direction for your screen.
Wrong direction.
Yeah, you're going the wrong way. There you go.
For me, it was the right way. All right, that guy. So put me and Cole on in P1 for the endurance race start.
Okay. Real quick, before we get to the endurance, one second.
I'm going to die here, dude.
It's an endurance podcast episode. You got to make it all the way through.
Well, it's going to be a long episode. It's not. Yeah.
I wanted to talk to Cole before we get to the super long race. You're doing KOM this year for the first time, which is double distance, correct?
That's Sunday. We're going out of chronological order.
Yes. To make that story, I didn't race KOM.
Well, let's not go there yet. Have you ever seen the movie?
I prolonged too long. I apologize.
No. It's not even about.
No, you don't have to go to endurance. Just not KOM yet, because there was reasons I didn't race.
That's a Sunday thing, and we're not there yet. Felix, hi, Felix.
All right, we're gonna have the graphic engineer throw up endurance, and we'll get into endurance. She's gonna be mad.
So figure it out. So yes. The saga of endurance.
Endurance. Are we going back to the beginning? Do we need to talk about building a bike?
There's There's a quick build-up, right? Cool. Quick build-up.
What do they call that? A prologue or epilogue? Prologues beforehand, right?
That's English. Pro sounds before.
We're motorcycle racers, bro.
Yeah. Sorry. That's my seventh language.
We're dummies. We know brat. That's what we know. So... backstory, not really, but kind of. I was not looking forward to doing this damn shit, this endurance thing. And Cole was super excited about it right after the end of last season. And so Cole's texting me and calling me, and we're talking on the phone. And he's like, dude, I'm going to buy this new bike. I want to build this endurance bike. You know, do this. I want to do that. And I was like, dude, that's stupid. Like, don't waste your money, you know? But we kept talking about it, and I just so happened to have a weapon in my garage, and I was like, hey, dude, like, why don't we race this thing? You know, like,
Did you say a weapon?
A weapon.
Like a large trash can that you throw at someone?
Like, yeah, like, I'm going to knock you out with a trash can leg if you talk shit about it one more time.
I was just saying, anyway, okay.
It's a damn weapon, dude. It's been all kinds of colors, but it happened to be green.
Let me break in here. I will add that I was super excited about it. And just to reiterate what Anthony said, I was anywhere from a brand new CBR 1000 Fireblade triple
SP
quadruple R to an Aprilia 660 to a Ninja 400 RRRR. All over the place. I was looking at used BMWs. I was looking at used Suzuki Gixxer 1000s, new ones, because that's the cheapest, you know, 1000 out there. Mm-hmm. I was all over the place, and I need to feel something. You know that, Anthony. I'll spend a lot of money just to feel something, and I couldn't.
That was the limiting factor for us trying to make that decision for you. I was trying to help you make a decision. As I would recommend bikes, like, hey, there's this and hey, there's that. He's like, that doesn't do anything for me. It doesn't get my blood boiling, you know? I'm like, God dang it. It's a perfect bike for that, you know? Mm-hmm. So, like, 2 months of this going on, knowing we haven't even announced this yet from USBA, right? But, you know, being a little bit on the inside of things, we knew that endurance was going to be happening. And 2 months goes on of these conversations about what bike we're going to build, and everybody we're talking to super excited about it.
Do you run 1,000 and go fast but burn tires? Do you What are the other guys going to do? What kind of competition are we going to be looking at? Is
right.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of questions there that you don't normally think about. You know, I'll just throw 1,000 under me and try to go fast. And then this opens up whole different strategies and realms and things that we've never, me at least, have never thought about too much.
Well, speaking of strategies, let's remember that for a couple minutes down the road. So and in the end, I had a 2019 ZX10 and
the weapon.
Actually, that bike is taking me so many places. And I was at a point where I was like, somebody's going to have to offer me a stupid amount of money or I'm just never going to sell the bike. Cause I kind of had a little bit of an emotional attachment to it. But okay. Cole was talking about this endurance thing. I was like, dude, look, it's the perfect bike. Like it's got suspension. It's got everything we need. It's reliable. It's not like a crazy built motor or anything like that. It's like a perfect bike. And he thought about it for a while. And then finally, I think it made the most sense, right? Like it was exciting enough, you know, it made the most sense. So the Precision Fab Endurance ZX10 was born. So coming into round one,
send me a picture of it. I need to, we got to pop that on the screen.
I'll send you a picture, but you know, it sucked. We didn't get any on-track pictures. Oh, well,
dang.
That's why I keep, you know, sharing the same one of us in the pit lane, going into round one. Like, I don't think I rode it at Chuck Walla right before I passed it off to Cole, but I was not feeling good and everything else. So I just did a few laps. It was super windy and crazy. I was like, yeah, whatever. It's good. And I gave it to Cole, put a clutch in it and gave it to Cole.
Mm-hmm.
So Cole made it look prettier and cleaned some stuff up, you know, changed a few parts that were rashed or whatever. Like this is just little things. So we get to Saturday. We did our qualifying on our sprint race bikes, his BMW, my new ZX10. We did our races.
And unless somebody's listening, you did take it out for that one qualifying lap, right? For the endurance.
It doesn't matter.
I know, but still.
yes, I did. Yeah.
The rule book on the endurance racing in Utah SBA is still very small. Luckily,
it is. So it was funny. We were standing around on the riders meeting and in endurance racers riders meeting. And Shane Turpin, if you don't know the name, look him up. But he's a legend in Utah, done some superbike stuff. Like, the guy's a beast. He came back to do this endurance thing. Like I said, there's a lot of hype about it, right? But he's standing next to me, and he goes, hey, did you do that lap time on your endurance bike, knowing I hadn't ridden it all, you know, whatever? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, because he was a couple seconds off already. And I was like, it was just kind of funny, yeah.
All right. So yeah, okay. He's just curious if that was the same bike, same rider setup.
Yeah. Okay. Well, what was funny though is it's not funny. It was kind of a big pain in the ass. And what I wanted to say was on Friday, going back to what was the S word, strategies, right? So on Friday, me and Cole kept telling each other, hey, we should go ride that endurance bike. Hey, we should go ride that endurance bike. But both of us had our own things going on. And it wasn't until like 2:30, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, the track day's over at 5. I was like, all right, I'm going to go ride the endurance bike, you know? So I go out there and I made it a half a lap and my foot slipped off a peg. And I'm like, what the hell? And I look down, there's oil everywhere, like everywhere. Oof. Bad. So I got off the racing line, put my hand up, did what you're supposed to do, right? Like trying to keep the track safe. And I made my way back around into hot pit, bring it in. I park it off to the side because there's oil everywhere. I don't want to leak into everywhere. So we take the fairings and stuff off and take a look at the bike. And it's got one of the case covers. It's leaking pretty bad. Mm-hmm. It's the stator. There's a plug on the stator that goes into the case cover and then it seals to the engine. So that plug was leaking really bad. And so that's kind of a weird thing, but it's not like you can just reseal it. Like we had to replace the stator. So okay.
Yep.
There might've been one in a spares box that might not have been at the racetrack. So I start asking around the paddock to my ZX10 friends and can't find one. Jerry Hicks, previous number one plate holder at USBA or whatever, like cool, super cool dude, fast guy. He was thinking about racing and decided not to. So he knew I was looking for a stator. He's like, hey, just take one off my bike. And he left his bike in the garage. He's like, it's yours. Just take care of it. I'm like, oh, sweet. So Friday night, I pulled the bike over to my trailer and Saturday morning, I jerked the stator out of it, put it in our endurance, the Precision Fab endurance bike. Mm-hmm. And then go out to do, I didn't even ride it after that. Like we cleaned it up a little bit, I was just like, let's just let it sit and be sealed. So then we did our qualifying on our bikes. We did our Saturday morning race. And then the endurance race is supposed to happen last on Saturday. So there's one more open race before between my race and between the endurance race. And Cole was racing it on the BMW. And I was like, hey, I'm going to take it out in that race and test it and just make sure we're good. Neither one of us have ridden the bike at this point, except for like a half a lap, right?
Yep.
I go out there and I let the field go. Like I do the out lap and I pull straight into pits and just kind of look down and double check myself. There's already some oil on my foot, but I don't know if it's leaking or if it's residual because we didn't do the best job of cleaning it up, to be honest. So I let the field go and I go out again and I do another lap and come back in and Ian from Trackstar standing on the wall. So he's taking a look at it. And he's wiping stuff down or whatever. I'm like, all right, cool. Like we think it's just residual, but like, let's do another lap and make sure. So I did like three of those. And then finally I was like, screw it, dude. Like we're either going to win or we're going to die. Cause I can't tell. So I bring the bike back in. Cole was out there doing his race. You know, as soon as he pulled in, he's like, we good? I'm like, yeah, sure. We're great. You know? But Chess actually helped us out by cleaning the thing up really good. And so Chess and Jason, they helped us out, get the bike cleaned up pretty good. But in the meantime, as they were doing that, I'm like, all right, cool. Like the bike felt like shit. So I want to change some things. So I raised the front end and I went to soften the springs and stuff like that. Somehow I screwed the forks up. So we went from like, okay, the bike's leaking oil really bad and we're screwed. We can't do this race to bike's fixed. Now we can do the race, but let's make some adjustments to, oh, I broke the bike again and now we can't do the race.
See, screw the forks up. Like suspension it's a long story, wasn't working. Dude.
No, like I, they were I made them.
It is a long story, but they were wasted. It wasn't rideable.
Okay. It was a mechanical error. It was a mechanic error, not a mechanical error. Like I totally screwed up. Right. So, but now me and Cole are sitting there going, hey, dude, like we can't race this endurance race. And I felt bad because, again, at this point, I still don't give two shits to race the endurance race. But Cole was super excited about it, right? And I was like, dude, that's my fault. I screwed up the bike. Like we can take my race bike and we'll do the endurance race. And Cole's like, I'm not racing your bike. And I was like, I ain't riding that BMW. So like we're both sitting here going, well, shit, I guess we're not going to do it. And so I'm feeling really bad. And I'm like, well, okay. So I take a part of the fork over to AJ from Paradigm Racing, who's actually Shane Turpin's mechanic. And Shane Turpin's only back to do this endurance race. And that means he's our main competition, right?
This is 30 minutes before start time, FYI.
Maybe even closer. So I haul ass over to AJ and I take this fork cap and I'm like, hey, dude, this is what the problem is. And I did it to both forks. He's like, all right, well, we can fix it. And we weren't able to fix it because we didn't have a special tool. But AJ came up with a way to rig it to where it was safe enough to ride. And I'll tell you that we just fixed the forks on Friday. It was not safe.
Good to know. Good to know now.
I'm just saying.
It was so, safe. You made it.
We made
it. Crash. We you made didn't crash it, anyone else. It was safe. Let's not
I guess the fact of the matter is, Easton's right. It was safe. But I got to go back to the start and turn one at some point.
When we get there,
please, to the audience, please keep in mind what he just said.
Yes. Well, we'll reiterate what I said there because I went out there and I went to AJ and he helped us fix the forks, right? Oil problem, fork problem, now both fixed maybe.
Thank you, right? Jerry, and thank you, AJ.
100%. Yes, you guys saved the day for us. So we're like 5 minutes till we have to race start. And we've been back and forth on the emotional roller coaster about, are we actually going to get a chance to do this race or not? And again, I felt bad because it was important to Cole. And on the other half of me, I was like, man, I hope I broke this bike permanently so we don't ever have to do this. But so 5 minutes to go, I'm like putting my helmet on because I got to take the bike out on the hot pit. And I'm starting the race is our only plan. Speaking of strategies, we don't have one at this point, which we learned.
We talked about a few, but all of them were out the window at that point.
Well, as soon as the bike started shitting the bed on us, like in just dumb little things, it was like, yeah, dude, like who cares?
Our hearts weren't even really in it at that point. It was just
at that point, we were just like, okay, let's just go see if the bike works. You know? So I look at Cole right before I head out on a hot pit and I go, dude, I don't trust this thing at all. Like if I feel any bit weird whatsoever, like I need to tell you, I'm really sorry, but I just don't think I can do it, dude. Like I don't want to freaking high side myself to the moon and crash myself and not get to do the rest of my races and all. Like everything was going through my head, right? Zero trust, zero confidence.
He told me, he said, we're going to go do the thing. But if I come back and tell you we're done. You understand?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I didn't want either of us getting hurt. And I actually felt a little bit personally responsible for all this, considering it's my old bike. I just hadn't ridden it in a long time, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So anyways.
The weapon. Yeah.
The weapon. So endurance race is about to start. There's 12 bikes on the grid. There's got to be more because this ended up being the most fun I had all weekend, as much as I hated going into
Quick snapshot. Sorry to interrupt, but all thousands, mix of everything?
A mix. There's ultra lightweight bikes, 600s and thousands.
How many liter bikes were out there?
50%.
Okay.
All right. Yeah. But our main competition, like this bike, so the Precision Fab Endurance ZX10, it's a race bike, but it's not an endurance race bike. It doesn't have a quick dump fuel. It doesn't have quick change stuff on it.
Or an electric fan.
We'll get to that too. Yeah, the problems haven't stopped yet. But I told Cole, I was like, screw the quick change because I can change the ZX10 rear tire in like 20 seconds, dude. Like, I'm super fast at it. So we don't need that shit. But anyways, so our main competition would be Shane Turpin and Lee Callens. Both these guys are really quick. Shane is, you know, a legend at UMC or Burt Brothers Motor Park or whatever. So I qualified P1 for us. Shane qualified P2 for them. And so when we go to line up for the start, I'm on pole and Shane's right next to me and they're on a fully built endurance R6, quick dump, quick change, the works, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the last thing I said to Cole was like, I don't trust this shit whatsoever. And I feel like I'm probably not going to do this race actually when we get out there. Right. Cole. That from my perspective, the lights went on, right? The lights go on, red lights. And then when they go off, the race starts, right?
Right. I got you. So it is an endurance race. You can't win it in the corner one.
Yeah.
Anthony only has one speed in the corner one. And that's flat out. So God knows if the fork bolts are tied on this thing. And he does his thing.
Mm-hmm.
The lights go out. He's hard left. Bumping bars with Turpin. I mean, you guys were into each other.
We touched each other. Yeah.
And then dives into corner one. Flat out. All reservations gone.
Heck yeah.
Competition kicked in. I know that he wanted to race Turpin, and I know that Turpin wanted to race him. So the whole fact that the thing was an endurance race was completely out the window as the laps set off. It was a drag race, flat out brawl for the first 3 to 4 laps. Mm-hmm. Anthony leading, Turpin all over his back tire at times. You know, he'd be 2 bike lengths back at times, but would regroup and catch back up to him. And we're just all standing on the wall going, I guess the bike's okay.
Leaves saying, I don't know if I'm going to race this thing. And then races it.
Yeah,
the weapon.
We talked about that red mist earlier. That was exactly it. Like, but what a cool opportunity, dude. Shane's been kind of on the shelf for a while, you know, like he's still riding and stuff and he's coaching and doing all this stuff. And like, you don't forget how to ride a motorcycle when you've done it that long. And to be able to grid up with Shane and race, like, it was freaking cool, you know, like I was excited about it and definitely wasn't going to let him beat me.
His previous motorcycle lap record holder out there.
He's to this day gone faster on either one configuration of tracks at Utah than I ever have.
Okay, so he's still he's the guy still holding it down.
Yeah, I would say so.
I've heard about it.
As far as aliens, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So
these guys bang bars, race like it's a 7-lap sprint for the first 4. It was on lap 4, I believe, right?
5.
It was on lap 5.
Yeah, so we completed 4, and then we started lap 5.
Unfortunately, Shane Turpin had an off.
Okay.
Which brought out a red flag and brought everybody back in the pits, which brings up another interesting thing about endurance racing. So the way they're doing it in Utah is when they finish the races for the day, as soon as they can get those concluded, If they're early, great. If they're late, great. But as soon as they can get them finished, the endurance race is going to start. And that endurance race is going to go till 5 o'clock when the track is cold. So we're dealing with a situation where race to race or race weekend to race weekend, we don't know how long that endurance race is going to be for sure. So we got to have a couple strategies on the table in case it might be a 30-minute endurance race if something goes haywire during the day.
Mm-hmm. They're all slated to be 90 minutes, except for round 6, which will be 3 hours. They're slated to be 90 minutes, but if the day runs long, it's just going to cut into the endurance time. And but so, also going forward, they're making changes on that so that that doesn't run as much of a risk. Like they really want to preserve the 90 minutes for endurance.
Okay.
And so the fact that Turpin had crashed and brought out a red flag, the time doesn't stop on an endurance race because it's a time, you know, whoever can do the most laps. So Anthony brought the bike back into the pit and we got to experience the, you know, don't touch it. Only one rider over the wall.
Can't add fuel. Can't touch tires.
Yeah. That was our first experience with all of these rules. And to the USBA's credit, they had a lot of policemen down there on the track. Cause it seemed like if you, moved wrong, somebody was there to yell at you for sure.
So
go ahead.
Only one rider over the wall. If you were coming in and changing riders, you come in a hot pit, do you have to have someone else there to have the bike?
I mean, not necessarily, no. So, like, but this is it like different.
Hockey style where the guy has to be in before the other guy can leave or whatever? Or is that just for that red flag scenario?
This was different from the red flag.
Okay. Right. All right.
So from the rider's perspective, right, these four laps, like, you know, I'm being blamed for racing it like a sprint race, which – that's not entirely incorrect. You know, like I wanted to lead, right? Mm-hmm. I just wanted to control the flow because I knew I wasn't sure, like I don't have any laps on this bike as of recent. I wasn't sure how it was going to hold together. So the parts of that were still in my head, but I could tell you that I could control the race from the front. And I knew what kind of lap time Shane's been running all weekend. I've been watching, he's been watching me. So when I got the whole shot, my goal was to run what I wanted to run the fastest lap I've seen him run all weekend, every lap. I wanted to make him have to push. And yeah. I knew that I could do that without like being on the limit. So the first like two or three laps, I was still kind of learning to trust the bike after I got the whole shot. Like the whole shot was just, you know, seeing red.
That and then just, so I was just blind. Ambition. Go ahead.
Blind yeah. yeah. And then after that, I was like, okay, are we going to die or are we going to make it? Right. So I do a couple laps and I could hear Turpin behind me. You know, and I have the lap timer, so I can see right what I'm running, and I kind of get my eyes kind of know it, you know, whatever. But then we get into like lap 3, and I can hear him like louder behind me. I'm like, okay, I need to step up a little bit, you know. So I lay down, I go like a second and a half faster for lap 4, and I created a little bit of a gap. Well, I think that sucked him in to be pushing to keep up with me, and unfortunately, like they made a change to the bike, I guess, right before the race, and it wasn't good, and he lost the front, and then he lost the rear, and it high-sided him, and he ended up getting hurt, actually. He broke his back in 2 spots, so, you know, whether or not he listens to podcasts, hopefully he listens to this, get well soon, and we hope to be racing you a few rounds down the road. I doubt it'll be soon enough for round 2, but what I didn't realize through all this until the red flag came out and I looked down at the dash is the bike is at 120 degrees Celsius. Yeah. Yeah. Easton's smart enough to know. I wasn't smart enough to know. I just know bad exactly how hot that is. But that's a problem.
Yeah.
So I literally like I immediately upshift a couple gears and try to just like cruise back into hot pit to try and get the thing to cool down a little bit. And I killed the bike as soon as I got on the hot pit and I rolled all the way down to our pit stop, which Chess and Jason got us on warmers and you know we were sitting there waiting it out. The restart, we had to go back to the same rider. So I had to get back on the bike regardless, which was fine because I think our only plan or strategy, which I still wasn't sure on, is like, you know, maybe I'll do like 15 laps or whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. So
he basically said, I'm going to do 2 laps and then it's yours. I'm out. That's what he originally said.
Yeah. I'm like, you want to do this endurance thing? Fine. Good luck. I will start the race. I will get the whole shot. Then it's all you. But so I went out there and did those five laps, you know, and, you know, racing with Turpin, and that kind of kept my head in the game or whatever. And I realized it was him. So now, like, we have an overheating bike, but the rest of the bike is working. So that part's good.
Did you guys pull out the leaf blower?
No, we didn't. We weren't prepared again for that. Next round, we will be. I think I figured all that stuff out.
I had to run back and get my helmet after the race started.
Prior helmet.
Okay.
So yeah, we were not ready, to say the least. We were just like, let's go ride motorcycles for a long time. So anyways, the red flag was like 8 minutes or something. So we went back out and I told Cole, I was like, yeah.
Oh shit.
I'm going to do like 5 or 10 laps and then I'll bring it in and we'll top it off with fuel and we'll do the rider chain. Well, the green flag came, or the lights went out, and I went in, I got the whole shot again. And we end up going into the rest of the race. There was no delays in the rest of the race.
You restart from, for red flag, restart from current position or start position?
In this case, they made us revert back to original grid positions. Okay. And ultimately, again, it didn't really matter considering it's about lap counts more than anything, you know, but I think going forward, they'll probably regrid appropriately. But in this case, they just put us back to original grid positions.
Okay.
So I got the whole shot. We're 5 laps in so far. My best guess as to how many laps you could do on this bike with fuel is like between 16 and 18. But I was also smart enough to know that, like, because the bike was overheating and it was continuing to overheat the rest of this race, that I was like short shifting and taking it easy in a couple of spots and then pushing the rest of the lap that way and keep the temperature down enough to where it won't blow the damn motor. Right. Mm-hmm. So I went from doing like 35s and 36s at a comfortable pace to doing like 38s, I would say. And then So the rest of my endurance race was spent just like, you know, just keeping a pace, like keeping the pace, keeping the bike cool, preserving everything. Mind you, we started the race with 6 lap old Dunlop R7, R5, R7 rear, R5 front.
Okay.
So we're 5 laps
in. On a warmer, ready to go, for the record. We were prepared enough to have that.
Yes, we do. So I went out there and my objective was just to click off the laps, right? And get to the point where we needed fuel and then swap riders. And then probably at that point, Cole would be able to finish the race because it was shortened and then the red flag. I was planning on doing like 10 more laps. I think I went out and did another 17 or 18 laps. I just didn't want to stop.
Did you get fuel at the first pull-in?
No.
Okay.
Yeah. So we, because of the red flag, we couldn't touch the bikes, including fuel. Yeah. So we got 5 laps. And then I went out and did another 17 or 18 laps. So I ended up 22 to 23 laps in, knowing that we could only do about 18 laps on fuel, but could never gurgled or burped or nothing. And I was like, I was just having fun, dude. I was like, I'm going to go out here and ride all damn day long for all I care.
And for the record, our pit board was telling him
to pit.
Come pit. In.
Get fuel in. Now.
And I was coming by like this, like, no, I'm good, dude. I'm still clicking off laps. So finally I pull in, you know, and I'm 23 laps into the race. I've got 23 laps clocked already. I think I've got a lap or two on most everybody else out there, right? Because I just didn't stop.
How far in, like, time-wise are we talking?
So 50? Technically, when I pulled in, we were like 46 minutes into the hour of racing that was shortened this round and with a red flag.
And from my perspective, like you said, he's up 2 laps, but from my perspective, everybody, I don't know what was going on with some of the strategies, but there was a lot of rider changes going on. There's a lot of teams coming in, switching. And I think, and you've got 3 different classes out there at the same time also. So it's a little hard to keep track of. You got Ironman, which is 1 rider, 1 bike.
Mm-hmm.
You got what me and Anthony were doing, which is 1 bike, 2 riders.
Up to four.
And then you've got Pony Express or whatever you call it. Four bikes, 4 riders, all on the same team, switching transponders. So it's a little hard to keep track of what's really going on.
Who's in what class and what the strategies actually are. And yeah, but you know, I had no idea where we were at. I know I was lapping some people, but like, because people are doing pit stops and stuff like that, like, you don't really know when you're on the bike exactly where you're at as far as timing and scoring is concerned. I obviously knew that we were leading, but I did not know by how much.
Right.
So I got to a point where I was looking down at the dash. I'm like, dude, I'm going to run out of fuel. And that's stupid because we put in all the work and we're probably leading by a good chunk. So I pull in and I rip down to pit lane, and Jason and Chess are there as our pit crew. So they throw it on stands real quick. And I'm like, yeah, we need fuel. Cole's ready to rip. I tell Cole, I said, hey, dude, like the bike is overheating, because he didn't know about this yet. I don't think I told him during the red flag. I was like, look, the bike is running hot. We got to take it a little easy, you know, in certain spots to give it an opportunity to cool, but, you know, put in the laps. And so Chess grabs the fuel can. We're getting yelled at because we don't have our fire extinguisher ready. And so Jason steals our neighbor's fire extinguisher because we never brought one out. That was a fire extinguisher handy. Yeah, exactly. Whoever it was, thank you. And me and Chess are doing the fuel, and like, I'm yelling at Chess cause I'm all hopped up, you know, just come off the bike. I'm like, dude, you're not getting it in fast enough. Cause he was like kinking the hose, and it was me kinking the hose, not him. He's like doing it. You know, it was fun. It was pandemonium for a second. It was crazy. I look at Cole and I go, oh shit, do you want that tire? And he goes, nope. And I was like, all right, shit, you know, do your laps. But right then somebody said, you only got 15 minutes left, and we're like putting a full load of fuel in it. We're talking about tires, and I think Cole heard that, and I heard that, and Cole's like, shit, I don't care what that tire is like. We're going, you know, if we only got 15 minutes left. So we cut the fuel off, recap it. Cole mounts the bike, and I told him it was at this moment. I'm like, oh, hey, the pit limiter is on, and you have to press this button to shut it off.
Well, let me do it. It was not at that moment. Earlier in the day, I think it was.
Okay.
Earlier in the day, he had told me that the signal switch on the Cowie, the signal switch, if you switch it to the left, it engages the pit limiter.
The turn signal. A turn signal? Okay. Yes.
What would be the turn signal is a pit limiter. Again, no experience with that from my side. And then you push it in like you would to disengage signal lights normally to shut it back off. So there's the pandemonium. I jump on the bike. Here I go from lap one, and I go down hot pit, make the turn through the gates to come back out and get on the track. And the bike's like, nah, 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 nah. And I'm like, what the hell is wrong with this pile of garbage? And I was like,
mind you, Cole has not ridden this bike, I don't think, ever. I mean, he rode it like 2 years ago for like three laps. But at this point, like, he's getting on the bike and he's never even ridden the thing. So
I entered the racetrack, still trying to figure out what was wrong with the bike, headed into like corner two and three, and went, oh, I remember he told me earlier, and I pushed the thing, and it went, you know, here we go.
Yeah, if you turn that off with your, I don't know how it is on yours. I had one on my bike, it's still there, but I turned that on one time because I was in a place where the speed limit was 25. I was like, I'll just turn that on so I can't even speed here. And then like halfway through, I was like, this is getting real boring. But I couldn't tell how open my throttle was. Right. I slowed down to what I thought would be like, yeah, that should be good. Clicked it off, and it did like wheelied up. It'll get you.
It's pretty aggressive how all of a sudden it decides to go. You know, like usually for me, when I pull in, I like through hot pit, I have the pit limiter on to pull off the track after a race, you know, and usually for me, I'll shut it off at the end of hot pit. So I don't try to go back out to start my race with it on and forget, you know.
Right.
But if I'm still on the gas and I hit it every time, it's like, you know, like it's just kind of funny. So anyways, Cole didn't put on a tire. He took on some fuel. He knew about the bike situation, temporarily forgot about the pit limiter, but out on track, he went to finish the race.
I went out there for my segment, had a lot of fun, took it easy, just kind of learned the bike. I knew we had a lead to kind of nurse. So I didn't push it. Just wanted to bring her home, learn the bike, so I don't have that problem next time.
And what did we do?
The pit limiter problem.
And we did the thing. We won
the
thing.
We did the damn thing. Big wieners. I mean winners.
Yes.
Both.
Weapons.
Maybe.
Wiener weapons.
So much for the G-rated episode. Sorry, guys. I've always got to take it to a weird spot. Sorry.
It was good. I think. I mean, we got some pictures that I will cherish forever, you know.
Absolutely.
Afterwards. And I think, you know, I learned something this week, Easton. I think it was, I'm going to tell my story again, Anthony. Sorry. But Utah Motorcycle Law posted some thing on Instagram that I don't know where they got from, whatever. But it was when you're driving down the road or something and you see a motorcycler with his hand on his hip, like driving the motorcycle with one arm, hand on the hip, it said, what you don't realize is that's the most satisfying, that motorcycle rider is in full zen, you know, blah, blah, blah. And trying to make it all emotional, like, you know, the wind in your hair, spiritual experience of a motorcycle, blah, 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 blah. No offense, Utah motorcycle law. I didn't necessarily think the post was the most awesome thing in the world, but for some reason it kind of stuck in my head and I started thinking about it. And I said, you know what? The best, for me at least, the best thing on race weekend, it's not the outlap. It's not even the race or being there. It's the cool down lap. After you've done the thing, you know, you see a lot of riders will be riding out there, visor cracked, you know, maybe waving at their friends, but the arm on the hip sometimes, you know, sitting up, getting your wind back. That is the zen moment of the race weekend. It's the cool down lap after the race is over. You've done it. You didn't die. And, you know, you finished wherever you may have finished, but that's like peace. That's the peaceful moment. And coming off on the endurance race, even though I did like 10 laps or something to finish that thing. That was a cool moment. The cool down lap was a cool moment. It was a zen experience right there. Just to say all the things that had happened, you know, this whole story we're telling you, you're doing your cool down lap and you're thinking through the day of the oil leaks and the forks not working and, you know, not having a fire extinguisher or a helmet in the pit or whatever it is. And you got to the end, it was over and you'd won. It was a great feeling.
I think it's extra like on the endurance thing. Like I've done it before and it's just, it takes so much out of you, you know, like it's a lot of riding and there's a lot that goes into it and you have the team effort and everything, like the weight of a few additional others on your shoulders. Like Cole had to make sure that he went out there and did his job to not disappoint me and vice versa, you know, which we would be fine. However, but at the same time, like that's additional, I don't want to say pressure, but it adds to the element of this race. And so, you know, even though I didn't get an opportunity to hit the cool down lap when I did my stint and I knew Cole was going to finish it and I had full confidence in his abilities, standing on the wall and watching the rest of the race was that moment for me. And I was like, dude, this is pretty rad. And to not speak just about our experience, like all the racers, all the fans, there was quite a few people watching this race. All of the crews and team members that helped all the endurance racers, all of us had the same aura about us after the race where everybody was just like, dude, that was sick. Like, this was so much fun. And, you know, it was, and that's all like on a USBA post was floating around out there. You know, they're asking about like what your best memory was of the weekend or whatever. And 80% of them were talking about the endurance race. It was like, it was a cool experience. And I went from like, screw this, I don't want to do it, to like, I can't wait to do the next one. Like my race bike's not even here. My race bike might be at the working class customs garage right now. And the endurance bike is in my garage and I'm doing a bunch of work to it to make sure that it's even better for the next round. And we don't have those issues, you know? So yeah. Well, super excited.
It added, you know, just to reiterate a little more on that, I guess is it just added, normally you go do a sprint race, you know, sometimes, you know, my wife says, here's the knuckles, see you in 7 laps, you know, you're gone and she's waiting for you when you come back. But the endurance race was different because it was long enough. It was long enough that like, not just our team, but every team, they had family members, different people coming. There was plenty of time to just sit there and hang out and watch. And so it was more of a family atmosphere or your full team was involved, not just that one random person.
Makes sense. So well worth adding to the schedule.
Oh yeah.
And Lugnut's addicted to endurance racing now.
I don't know about that, but yeah. It was definitely fun.
It was fun. And you know, afterwards I sat down on that cement wall and poor Jeff Taylor, he thinks every time I see him, he's been calling me a dick all weekend. He said, every time you talk, you're complaining about something. And that's not true. You guys. Okay. That might be true, but but I tried pulling him over and I started talking about something and he's like, oh, here we go. He was ready for the complaints. And I said, no, I'm not complaining. I'm just thinking. Like the other interesting thing about endurance is on a sprint race, it's 7 laps. You know, every once in a while you get a red flag. You have to go back to the pits and that throws everything into turmoil or whatever. But when you start talking to endurance, 60 minutes is a hell of a lot different than 90 minutes. Mm-hmm. And 3 hours is a hell of a lot different than 90 minutes. And not knowing for sure what kind of time you're going to have to run. Like I said, those strategies have to be more thought out. They have to be, you know, upfront, ready to go. If the race is going to take this long, this is what we're doing. If it's going to only go that long, that's what we're doing. And the whole aspect of the race changes with just even that race we just did. If it would have been another 10 minutes, another 20 minutes, there would have had to have been a tire change.
Right.
Or, you know, maybe one more rider change. Who knows, right? There, it just changes so many aspects of it. Our makeshift strategy worked perfectly on that day, but that same strategy wouldn't work fully.
Going forward. Yeah. We'll sort it out for next round. But that was the main event for Saturday. So not to conclude on the endurance thing, but there's some more to talk about on Sunday. And we had a big crew. Like, it was the whole Precision Fab team. So Chess and Jason and family, obviously Cole, Clarissa,
Carver. Don't forget my boy Carver.
Yeah. Carver came out.
Jade
from Trump. So it was cool. Like, there were so many people there for this event for the weekend. They came out for the whole weekend. So endurance draws a crowd too, right? But we also had my buddy Damon from Legal Ride and his girl Martina, and Dakota from Lux Vani and his media guy were there. So, like, we had this huge crew in the pit. We won't talk about the parking situation anymore, but that made it more difficult that so many people showed up. But it was great. It's a good thing. But then, so we always have this thing where we try to get kicked out of an Applebee's on our race weekends, because there's an Applebee's in Tooele, owed to Ricky Bobby. Dude, we didn't even make it to our seats in Applebee's, and we got kicked out this time. So that was pretty cool.
That was a record.
Yeah, that was a record. So 17 of us, or 18 of us, Richard and Carla from Apex Assassins and the kids too, they showed up, right? So we actually went like 20 deep to the brewery, enjoyed a good, nice dinner, talked about the endurance and the racing and everything else. And it was just a great day and a great way to wrap up the day on Saturday.
Well, heck yeah. That's awesome. You know, honestly, I'm running a little short on time, and I think it's a great way to wrap up the episode also, but that's killer.
You got five more minutes.
Yeah.
Five more minutes. Cool.
Yeah. What's up?
So you asked about KOM earlier.
Yeah.
All right, so round one last year, it snowed.
We did promise that. Yeah.
All right. It snowed, it rained, it iced. That was round one. Mm-hmm. So Friday and Saturday weather was great. Sunday, actually, it wasn't too bad Sunday morning, but we knew there was rain on the horizon, so all eyes on the skies, right? Morning sprint racing went good. I think Cole and I did a race in the morning both, and we did well. I ripped the fastest laps I've ever ripped around East in the morning race, knowing that the afternoon would not give me the same opportunities. Couldn't quite get in the 32s like I wanted to, but I was consistently in the 33s and happy about it.
Okay.
So lunch is at noon and KOM is supposed to be at 1. Lo and behold, at 12:30, the skies opened up and it freaking dumped rain. It was crazy. Cole, I don't think you had reins mounted, right?
I could have. That might be my biggest regret from the weekend, but I could have made it happen, but I didn't. So I did not have rain tires on a bike.
But it was a weird situation because, like, it dumped rain for 15 minutes, like heavy, like the paddock was soaked, right? And then it stopped. And then the track put us on a lightning delay. So instead of being 15 minutes to race time with a wet track, we were 30 minutes to race time with a wet track. Because there was a breeze and the sun poked back out, the track was not fully dry, but dry.
Yeah.
But there was too many wet patches to run a dry race.
Yeah.
So race direction.
For the record, I was suited up, ready to go, because I really thought in my heart they were going to call it dry.
Switch it back. Yeah. And only because of a few puddles in one damp corner, really. And they just couldn't. So wet race it was, and that means DOTs or rains. And so I took the grid. There were still 10, 12 people that came out. Yeah. All of us on reins, except for one guy who went DOTs, which was actually the smartest call, because after two laps, the track was dry. And yeah. I don't know if you've ridden rain tires in the dry or slick tires in the wet, but I think I'd rather ride slick tires in the wet than rain tires in the dry. It was atrocious. It was terrible. So three laps in, like, my best laps had already happened, and I just had to manage, right? But just to sum it up for shortness of time, I won KOM. The guy in DOTs was AZ. He pulled a second, coming from fifth, because as the track got drier, he only got better.
Yeah.
And then so he finished second, and then Lou on R1 also on Reigns finished third.
There you go. Final tip to club racers, I guess, is full on rain race tires aren't necessarily always the answer when you have DOTs available.
I think all of us forget about that. You know what I mean? Like DOTs are an option.
Yeah. I mean, like in a scenario like that, they kind of makes sense, you know? Yeah. And I mean, obviously to your point, like did pretty good on them. So.
Yep. So the actual tip there for club racers is go spend a bunch of more money on extra wheels and just have every type of tire mounted at one time.
There you go. Yeah. Every Dunlop compound ready to go.
Sure.
You don't even have to worry about what they pull up. Awesome. Well, hey guys, I appreciate you guys coming out and joining me for this wonderful episode. I feel like we might have to just keep doing this. It's great. You know, you only get so much in the phone call stories, but this platform, I feel like gives a good amount of time.
Well, there's five more rounds to wrap up, so we can definitely do that.
There we go. There we go. Yeah. Next round.
Come out and race.
Yeah. Come race.
Come do endurance.
May 24th and 25th. Put together an endurance team and go race for 90 minutes.
You don't need a plan or a strategy. You don't even need a bike that works right. Just come race.
Yeah.
There you go.
Let's do it.
There you go. Yep. All right. Well, to the audience, thank you guys for joining us. Hope you guys enjoyed. We'll see you guys in the next episode.
Thank you, boys. Thank you, everyone listening. See you later.
On the ground at 100 miles an hour.